It always matters if you're where you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'll be able to teach if you're not like in your normal spot. You know, between you two guys balancing the rooms.
Now you're teaching it on this spot. Looks pretty nice.
Next class would be like right there, and then right there, and before you know it, you no longer have your seat. Yeah, the next class you're going to be like right here, do the train. Before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. I'll do that here. Dear God, Father in heaven, thank you for today and for all the blessings you've given to each of us. Thank you for the time that we have to come together as Christians and disciples, hopefully wanting to learn what you want us to learn. Thank you for the Bible and the opportunities we have to know who you are. You are a great God and you do great things. I pray that you do great things in our lives so that we can show others who you are and they come and seek you. I pray that tonight we learn more about Peter and through his example how we should act and or shouldn't act. Towards others. Give us the strength to do the right thing at the right times. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so we're in lesson 3. We're going to pick up where we left off on Sunday. So just to back up one step, one of our last comments, we're in the story where Jesus is naming the apostles, and we discussed the difference between apostles and disciples. And then we were looking at actually Luke 6, 12 through 16, but on this slide we're looking at the later end, and we were talking about Peter's name was listed first, and in other Gospels we confirmed that it was first there as well, right? And the other thing that we also confirmed in the other versions was whose name was last?
Judas.
Always, Judas, right. Some of the other names are mixed up here and there, a little bit in the middle, but that's very consistent in the listing. And then, so we also talked about how Judas's name was last, and it talked about him being a traitor. And we focused on the last 2 minutes of our class about the words became and how Judas became a traitor. And we in our lives, we have the ability, and whether we know it or not, we're becoming something. We're either becoming closer to God or we're becoming an enemy of God by being sinful and doing other things. And that's something that I challenge us to think about throughout the week to see where we're going with our lives and always be on the right side of becoming. Because even in Judas's case, he will forever be on the wrong side for multiple reasons, and that's a different class. But that's where we were at whenever we ended the class. The last comment, I think, before we get into the second part was this. We didn't get there yet, but all of the writers put him last, right? So my question, or a thought question for us is, what do you think the writers thought of Judas? Why is he described with this extra bit of information? You know, the only other person that they talked about was, one of them was called Son of Thunder, and that's, you know, and we know, you know, why, but we really, no one else got any extra about their name, about whether they were good at this or bad at that, right? So why do you think the writers, what do you think they thought of Judas, and why do you think they gave him this extra piece?
Well, Judas was not only an apostle, but he was their friend. Mm-hmm. So when he betrayed Jesus, he also betrayed them. So to them, it was probably closer to home. So they just added that because it hurt them so deeply and so deep that their friend did this. Betrayed them.
That's good. That's a good thought. So in general, you're saying that the fact is that's what he was. He was an apostle, and he was close to them, but they wanted it recorded, if you will. I mean, ultimately, you know,
yeah.
He did, but they felt that to say that, to really tell the whole story, because they didn't have to. I mean, the Bible tells you later on what happens. We can all figure that out, but they all felt the need to stick that in there.
Right, like a personal statement about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right on. Because like you said, I know I do, sometimes maybe you all do, you know, you forget, you know, they went through a lot together, you know. Close your eyes and think about your best friend that you've had for the past 2 or 3 years, you know. Thick and thin, good good and bad, all kinds of stuff, and then all of a sudden one day, they're a traitor. You know, you'd be hurt as well. That'd be a strange, you know, line to walk. So, good thoughts. Anybody else have any other thoughts? Okay, cool. So, would you have chosen Peter for this responsibility to be one of the apostles, knowing what we knew at this time? You know, we don't get to necessarily look ahead and see what we know that he did in addition. But at this time, you know, Jesus knew him for, you know, this amount of time compared to, you know, the whole deal. Would you have chosen Peter for this responsibility, and why or why not?
I would have. Because he has some great qualities that could be strengthened, like his loyalty and his faithfulness and honesty that he showed him. Mm-hmm. I think for an apostle, that was one of the main things that you had to show. So even though that was strong, God and Jesus could work with that and make it stronger.
Yeah, that's good. Good thought. Anybody else have any thoughts about whether you would have chosen the benefits or not?
I mean, Jesus was living in Peter's house, so it would probably have been really awkward not to choose Peter from a living standpoint. But, you know, just my thought.
Yeah, that would have been really awkward, you know, before he went to the mountain to pray, if he went to Peter and be like, look, Peter, I'm going to make this big decision. Spoiler alert, you're not going to be on the list. So I'm just telling you right now. So that would have been really, really awkward. You have a good point for that. But I do definitely agree with you 100% that, you know, this is going to sound like a strange statement, but, you know, God's pretty smart. He sees through all of our hearts as to what he can turn us into and mold us and bring us closer to him, right? And although we, as humans, may see Peter and go, man, that's a roll of the dice right there, you know? God knew it wasn't a roll of the dice. He knew what his heart was like, and he knew what he could kind of mold him into. And we get the benefits of seeing all the stories along the way where Peter does, yes, does he fall? Yeah. But boy, he takes some big steps, doesn't he? And that's another reason why I think this whole class is going to be really good, to see all the steps that he takes and some missteps. And I think there's a lot of things we can learn from that. It's kind of like a side thing. So, good thoughts. So what did Jesus do in the rest of the chapter after naming this group of apostles? And I think that was our last question. So does anybody have any thoughts on that? Anything they want to say? I'll go ahead and jump ahead. So there's quite a list of things. These are all, I don't know if you want to call them, you know, big things, but these are all really infamous. I don't know if that's a really good word either. These are big things. I mean, who's ever heard of the Beatitudes? You know? How many times, no matter how short you were or how tall you are now, whenever you've gone to a Bible class, you know, love your enemies. Don't judge others and be ready to forgive them. I mean, all these lessons he taught for the rest of the chapter. What a chapter, right? He picks the 12 that are to be closest to him for this amount of time. He knew that he was on this earth to work with him to try to spread the gospel. We're going to get to that here, hopefully, toward the end of the class today. And then he teaches, if you will, these really big cornerstone ideas, if you will, to all of his disciples. Anyone following him. Love your enemies. All the Beatitudes. Don't judge. You know, a tree by its fruit, bear good fruit. You build your house on faith, and you should build it on the rock. And that's Jesus. That's my inference there from what he's saying. And whenever he taught all the people, he also taught them about woes. He was telling them, don't go down this path. Don't do these things. They will be reimbursed, if you will, with wrath, or, you know, bad things are coming for these. You don't want to go there. But in the end, notice it also says in 6:19 that it didn't say he healed six more people. He didn't say he only healed the ones with whooping cough and somebody with a turned ankle. Didn't say that, right? It said he healed them all. So just think about that sentence. I think a lot of times, I'll speak for myself, I don't know about you guys, there's a lot of these sentences that I just read right past. You know, heal them all, okay, and you just go right on. Like, we've already read how many people were chasing him, and they already knew that he was doing these great things. And we discussed in other classes things that nobody else could do, like the demon possession. That wasn't something that any doctor of the time had a pill for, or an elixir, or anything. He was doing things that nobody else, and people were coming out of the woodwork, if you will, for all these things. And he didn't selectively heal them of some things. He healed them all. I mean, that's a big sentence, if you stop and think about it. Any comments on any of that stuff before we go to the next, I think, lesson two, or the two, whatever you call it, second part?
I think it's great that he also mentioned this after setting up his disciples, because it's almost like he was telling them, this is how you treat other people. Like, it was for his disciples, but also it was training the apostles on how to interact with people going to the future, because they're going to go through a lot of stuff. They're going to go through a lot of stuff where they would want to hurt other. Like, if someone was hurting you, you'd want to fight back. But going through these, Jesus really showed them, this is how you act and how you do this. So I think it just kind of sets up everything.
Yeah, great. I 100% agree that all these things are, you know, really good foundational ideas isn't the right word, but thoughts of how we need to think and interact with each other and be able to follow Christ and God, how he wants us to best. You know, just one example, you know, judge not and forgive and you'll be forgiven. How many people have you seen in your life that can't let go of something? They can't forgive somebody for something. And how does that run havoc in their life? Another sidestep to that, how far does that take them away from God? Because they're concentrating on this one thing. That's a really big piece. And that's just one of them. All those other things are foundational things, if you will. So I like your thoughts on that. That's very important. You know, all these people came to be healed. Some of them just came to be healed. But I guarantee you, his 12 apostles were absorbing all of this. And quite possibly at another level than everyone else, because the majority of them had been with him for a major amount of time and seen other things that solidified their faith. But again, that's probably another class. We'll get to that. Great comments. Okay, so we're going to talk about Luke 8, 40 through 42, 49 through 56. And they call this Peter among the privileged three. So, really quick, before we get too deep into this, we're talking about the three. And so I told y'all last time how I searched and did some pictures and stuff. So I thought this was like a really cool picture. It's just a random sign, kind of like neat. And then I saw this picture and I thought, that's pretty good, because that's going to apply to one of my very last slides. And I think if I did it correctly, I put the picture on the point I want to make. So I want you to remember this picture for two reasons. One's serious and one's funny. Number one, we're going to talk about three people laughing last. Secondly, I don't know why, and maybe I'm twisted, but I think this guy looks like me a little bit. Like, none of the other ones do, but I think that kind of looks like me a little bit if I did that. So anyway, trust me, I won't do that again. So, Luke 8, 40 through 42. Can somebody turn to that, and then we'll read it? Any volunteers? Okay.
Now when Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him, for they were all waiting for him. And there came a man named Jairus, who was ruler of the synagogue, and falling at Jesus' feet, he implored him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter about 12 years of age, and she was dying.
Yeah, go ahead and jump to the other part. We'll read the entirety, and we'll jump back into some of the things.
Okay. While he was still speaking, someone from the ruler's house came and said, "Your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher anymore." But Jesus, on hearing this, answered him, "Do not fear, only believe, and she will be well." And when he came to the house, he allowed no one to enter with him except Peter and John and James, and the father and mother of the child. And all were weeping and mourning for her, but he said, "Do not weep, for she is not dead, but sleeping." and they laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. But taking her by the hand, he called, saying, "Child, arise." And her spirit returned, and she got up at once. And he directed that something should be given her to eat. And her parents were amazed, but he charged them to tell no one what had happened.
Right. Thanks, John. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, first of all, before we get into it, it's J-A-I-R-U-S, and I'm not exactly sure how you say that, but no matter how hard I tried, I kept typing J-A-R-I-U-S. I typed it so many times that, you know, whenever it tells you a misspelled letter, it's got a little red line under it and it wants you to change it. So I typed it wrong so many times, once I typed it right, it still told me I did it wrong. And if you look on my screen, there's red, but it doesn't transfer up here. So if you see something misspelled back and forth, it's my fault because I tried my best to go back and forth because I couldn't get that spell right. But it's Jairus. Can we agree on that one for the rest of the time when we're talking about it? Okay, Jairus. So who was Jairus from the story? Yep, the ruler of the synagogue. Now, the ruler of the synagogue, any deep thoughts on what it meant for him to come to Jesus for help? One thing I want us to think about, well, let me ask the question and then I'll jump in there. Any thoughts on that? What do you think it meant for him to come and ask Jesus for help?
That he was desperate.
Desperate. Really good. We're going to jump into that maybe in that one of, toward the end of this section, but you're right. Very desperate. Anything else? I think you were going to say something.
I was just going to say exactly what Ian said. I mean, he was falling at his feet. I mean, I've never just, like, threw myself at somebody's feet begging them for something or begging for help. I mean, I've asked people for help, but I've never done that, so... Right. You have to be in a pretty tough spot.
Really, a really tough spot. So you're both hitting around something that I want to bring home for us to think about for a second. And then what you all said is going to be the exclamation point to my comment. He was the ruler of the synagogue. Now, according to man, if they were to take a poll on who the most religious person in that area was, what do you think their answer would be?
The ruler of the synagogue.
The ruler of the synagogue. Do you think he ever prayed for his daughter? Just think of what his profession is. I would sure hope that he did. You would think and know that he probably did, right? And maybe for a while. He should be a deeply religious man to hold the position. True. So for him to be in a position where he has possibly asked for all this help and prayed and done some other things through what his position is, for him to come to a man like Jesus, who to him would probably be, would you consider it correct to say he's an outsider? Because there was debate whether he was, you know, of demons and of God, or what is he? Would you have to be desperate? Would you have to be in a really tough spot to come to him? Just like you said, he didn't just come and kind of flirt around a little bit. Hey, just over there, maybe I'll go talk to him for a minute, you know. No, he came, what were your words?
He fell at his feet.
Fell at his feet. That's exactly how it describes, right? So for a moment, I just want to think for a minute who he was and what it would take for someone in that position to end up in that position. Do you think it would take a fair amount?
Oh, yeah.
You would really have to be at your wit's end, so to speak.
I think even if you just take what he does out of the equation for any grown man to... I mean, it would be weird if I just went to Mike and just threw myself at his feet. Like, man, I need your help. Like, I mean, it wouldn't be weird if you were in that out of the spot. But, I mean,
sure.
I just think it shows... Maybe not just desperate, but also his believing, his faith in it.
Yeah.
And you go a little further with it and say it's okay for us to even do that with faith in him.
I think it's an extra thread of interesting to it, what his position was and what he was doing. So there's that thought you can take with it, what you like. So how old was Jairus' daughter? It says in there, how old does it say she was? 12. Okay. So she's still a child, right? We all know 12-year-olds, and sometimes they act really big. But you know what? They're still 12, right? I think we can all probably remember when we were 12, we probably thought we were 17 or 18 or 25. But really, in the end, we still like cartoons a lot, and we still like to, we said some funny things, and we were 12. So this is somebody who's, you know, I think a good word might be still very innocent. Well, I'll just leave it at that. So you know that he tried everything, and Jesus was his final hope, just like what you were saying. Jesus had to be his final hope, right? You would think that from his actions and stuff. What was her condition when he came to Jesus?
She was dying.
She was dying. I mean, it doesn't mince words. It doesn't say she was very sick. You know, sometimes it talks of, in the Bible, not that it's wrong, but it dances around some things about how deep, you know, someone's ailment is. We don't know. But this 100%, like, she's dying. Like, that's very serious. It's not a bad opinion about how sick she was. So, in 49 and 50, that's whenever we skipped over a section. It says, what did Jesus promise Jairus whenever he came to him?
That if he believed that she would be made well.
Yep. And do not what?
Be afraid.
Do not be afraid. So, on a side note, I might be getting ahead of myself. When we come to Jesus, we need to have the same heart as Jairus. We may not have a 12-year-old that we're begging mercy on. In a lot of ways, we should be begging for mercy for ourselves, is what I mean here, is, and every time we come to him, if we're sincere, I guarantee you, he will have the same answer to you. Do not fear. Whatever your issue is, whatever the sin may be, wherever you find yourself, you can be well. You need to repent and follow him. So it's in my mind, God bless you. That's a parallel or a thought that you might be able to take from it. Because Jesus is telling him almost nothing different than what he would tell any of us. Does that make sense a little bit? So there's a side thought. Did they, like, this is pretty serious. You know, we're talking about somebody's dying, you know. If you called 911 right now and you said, hey, we're West End, there's a person, they're laying on the floor, I'm pretty certain they're dying. What would happen?
You'd rush here.
They'd rush here. You'd have an ER, and you'd have an ambulance. You'd be doing that. We'd probably have people in the building. You'd be running, finding medical personnel, right? I know there's several RNs. I know a couple nurse practitioners off the top of my head that I can think of that might be able to help that person, right? If one of us fell down on the floor right now and we knew that somebody was dying, would we just go, you know what, let's read three more chapters. And you know what, I've heard this really good joke today. Let me tell you that real quick. And then we might go find somebody. Would we act that way? No, we would probably do it pretty quick, right? So did they run? Did they run to Jairus' house?
I don't think it really indicates that, but I would say he probably didn't.
Yeah.
He probably didn't.
So in general, it talks about he, as he moves towards her house, that's where they have the story in the middle about the woman who had been bleeding for 12 years, which I find really fascinating, and I might even comment about it a little bit later, is that this woman has been bleeding just as long as this girl has been alive. I think that's an interesting parallel. I don't know if you thought about that or not. But that's a separate story. We're not really getting into that. But that happened in the middle.
I would say that was probably a fast walk, because it does say there's a big crowd, so you can't really run in a crowd. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine they were trying to move with haste, but not at the same time not being able to all out run.
Of course, yeah. Jesus wouldn't have that sense of urgency because he knew what he could do. Same thing with...
the one that was dead.
Yeah,
my mind was blank too.
Really,
you know that one that was dead. That's
yeah.
a really good description. Really biblical error on my part. Yes, so that's kind of the point I was wanting to make in general is they were moving that way, and yes, they were having a hard time because of the crowds. Number one, that should tell you how many people are around. And number two, I think that tells you that, you know, Jesus knew what was going on. And that's another example, you know, for us. I think sometimes we get in a hurry up. I need these things fixed. God, please give me this and do that. But God has a different idea and a different pace for us. And guess what? His pace is always right. And his pace always has a purpose. So in this case, his pace had a purpose, and he knew how it was going to go through that. What message came before they got to his house? So somebody came and told them what?
Call it off. She's dead.
Yep.
They told him not to bother the teacher.
Yep, because don't bother the teacher, because it's finished. Again, another problem, if you will, that no one else can solve. No one else can solve death, just like no one else could solve demon possession and things, right? So, who did Jesus permit inside the house once he arrived?
Peter, John, and James, and parents.
Yeah. So, let me 8:51. So, let's listen really carefully. So it says, but Jesus, on hearing this, answered him, do not fear, only believe, and she will be well. And when he, Jesus, came to the house, he, Jesus, allowed no one to enter with him, except Peter and John and James, and the father and mother of the child. All were weeping and mourning for her. But he said, do not weep, for she is not dead, but sleeping. So they got into the house. Jesus only lets who inside? The three. And the mother and father, right? So here we go. My fun little picture. I got it right. In 52 it says, all were weeping. So who is all? All were weeping and mourning for her. But he said, do not weep, for she is not dead, but sleeping. So who's all?
Even the three.
What was that?
Even the three.
Even the three. Yep. But who is weeping? According to this version, who would be weeping? It says all. Who's all?
The people who are in the house.
And who would be in the house?
Jesus.
And?
Peter.
The three apostles. And the mother and father, the five. And you say to yourself, well, hold on, I guess one more question. 53. And they laughed at him, knowing she was dead. Who exactly is they? So, go ahead.
I was just
saying, you got a good one.
Doesn't necessarily specify, it's assumed that all laughed. And I would assume it'd be one of those kind of sorrowful laughters. Mm-hmm. I don't think it would be how funny a joke. It'd be more of like a sorrowful laughter.
Like Abraham.
Now for, what's that?
Like Abraham.
Like Abraham? Yeah, could be. Yep. For lack of time, because we're not as far as I'd love to be, and I'd like us to really get into 3 and 4, at this time I would have read Mark 5, where Mark tells us his version, if you will. And then Matthew 9:23-25, it has a little bit different. It talks about when he gets there are mourners. And he said, don't worry, you know, she's dead. And it says they all laughed at him. And then it says they went in the house. Okay? But it says they all laughed at him. I think all versions say they all laughed at him. So depending on the inference, what I guess I'm trying to think is like, according to this, it sounds like it's the five. According to this version, because that's kind of how that works. And I do understand the other two kind of say some things. But Yeah, before we go there, it's this. So, I gotta put my little three-picture version back up there. So, one of life's greatest treasures is the ability to laugh, right? At least for me. Laughing with others is a joy. We all love to converse in this way. Think about it whenever you get together with your friends. What do you all do? You have a good time hanging around. I guarantee you laugh about stuff. You've got inside jokes. You love to make each other smile. You like to pick on each other. When you pick on each other, what do? You just laugh about it, right? We just laugh. We love to laugh. Laughter is a gift. On the flip side, laughing at someone can be devastating and debilitating. I had this down here. I'll go ahead and say it. I'm 48 years old. Hello, my name's Kelly. I'm 48 years old. I still remember a situation when I was in junior high school. This one person laughed at me with no one else around. She was the only person in the hallway. I won't get into it. And no, I don't need therapy about it. But I can still remember the situation, and she laughed at me. I could probably close my eyes and still feel... that from that happening. Now, she was someone I knew, not my best friend, but someone I knew, and it hurt. And that's just one person. This was either five or a crowd. So I think I talked about it a couple other times, and maybe I'm talking about too much, but you know, we have to remember, you know, Jesus was human just like us. He was tempted just like we are. And here's another example where he could have been tempted to be like, hey, look, I'm getting ready to do this great thing. She's really not dead. And guess what? Three of my best friends, for lack of a better word, are snickering at me or full belly laughing at me because they don't believe. As to where my little junior high experience was like, how do you think he felt in that moment? I'm sure that's just an example of where he could have been tempted to be human and maybe lash out, maybe have a chance to get a little callous about the whole thing. I don't like these three anymore. They're still one of my apostles, but I remember that time they laughed at me. I don't know. Again, Jesus wouldn't do that, but hopefully you see what I'm trying to say. I think that's something we forget sometimes, is, you know, Jesus was impenetrable, and it was easy. There was no easy about it. Things like this are real life and hard, even as little as someone laughing at you. And I find it would have hurt even more. He may have expected it from the husband and wife. The apostles? These are my peeps, man. What are you doing? You're not laughing with me, you're laughing at me. And again, whether it's a snicker or, like Abraham, or if it's a full out, did he just say, she's not dead? It could have been a full out laugh for all we know. All of them could have heard equally. Does that make sense? So, all right. But guess what Jesus did? You know, yes, you know. He just turned and went about his work, right? And that's another example for us. As we go through life, I guarantee you we're going to have people laugh at us. What are you doing on Wednesday? I'm going to church. You mean you're not going to Western's opening basketball game? I mean, that's tonight. Dude, 15 of us are going. How come you're not going? Well, you know, I mean, I need to be at church. I got my brothers. I can't believe you're doing that. How dumb are you? That's stupid. We're all going to be there. Anybody who cares about anything is going to be there. You ever heard stuff like that? This is real life. And it happened to Jesus. And it happens to us. And as we need to be more like him every day, here's another example where he teaches us what to do. Even when your closest friends laugh at you for doing the right thing or for being about God's work, stay the path. Continue with God's work. Make sense? Any questions? Okay. So, what did Peter see Jesus do for the girl?
She became alive.
Yeah. She got up. Like, did it take her like 15 or 20 minutes, or did all five of them have to help her off the bed?
It was like she was literally sleeping.
And it says, I think it says immediately in this version or one of the versions, because that's the word that I said, or a word that I wrote down. He completely healed her, you know? No one helped her up. Jesus completely healed her. Did he follow through with his promise to Jairus? Yes, exactly what he said. And then that also speaks to Jairus a little bit, right? He told him what he had to do, and he would do it. He had the faith, and he wasn't afraid. And it went through. Or he did this for them. What did he tell the parents about this event, and why do you think he told them to do this?
Not to tell anyone.
He told them not to tell anybody. And why do you think that he did that? Because usually, I mean, this is a great thing, right? You know, they should be really excited. I'd be excited, you know?
I think this is the first time someone's been raised from the dead. Kind of,
yeah.
Right, isn't this?
Watch or raise someone.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
Well, this is the first time they see Jesus raise somebody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Were you going to say something, Alan? Were you like flinching?
No, I was going to say, I think it goes back to what we talked about in a previous class, where, like, he still had more work to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if they go tell that, it could be the end of his work, where
plus,
he's at.
Yeah.
There are people who are, you know, knowing about him and looking for things.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the answer to this, you know, we know, but we don't know, is, you know, this is ultimately part of his plan. To try to stay on the down low a little bit, because he's already got everybody following him. You know, he's doing this with demons, and he's healing, you know, broken ankles, and he's healing a woman who's been bleeding for 12 years. All this is getting out because all that's really in the public. But boy, not to make a miracle, you know, more valuable than the next miracle, but dude, you just raised somebody from the dead. I mean, you know, that's big, big deal stuff. He could have gotten to where he couldn't even get around anywhere, which would not be part of his plan, right? So I think ultimately he was still he was creating his path towards what he ultimately needed to do. And to keep that on the down low had to be part of it.
Well,
yeah.
He can't even walk now. They're bringing all the sick to him. Mm-hmm. What if they start digging
people up? Yeah. Personally, I'm so glad that he made this decision, because that would have been really weird if that's what they were doing. But I could see people doing stuff like that.
Well, and it also explains why he puts everybody out, because if even on any other person saw, probably even his other apostles, word was going to get out, and word does get out. In another version, it says report spread through the town. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, I think it's just really just trying to buy time before mm-hmm. he can, like, get away. So that way, when report comes out, it's more as a rumor instead of a confirmed fact at the time. Because when he raises Lazarus later on, there are a lot more witnesses, and I'm pretty sure he just has the witnesses at that point, because it's close now to the time of crucifixion.
It's more to his purpose.
Well, yeah. But it's to sort of get, you know, to confirm it to the people, but also to get sort of the Jewish leaders to finally say, okay, we gotta kill Jesus, kind of thing. So I'm pretty sure, you know, he knows what he's doing at this point. And right now, he's just trying to, as you said, keep it on the down low. He knows it's gonna spread. It spread with the leper. It spreads with, I mean, whoever he heals is gonna go tell some people. You can't just come out and be like, "Whoa, I thought your daughter was dead." Oh, yeah, no, she was totally sleeping. It was just really, really deep sleep. It was going to get out eventually. I think he's just trying to buy time so that way he can get out and get to another town.
Yep. And it, ultimately, again, that's all part of his plan. So it's all purposeful, I guess is a good word. In 56, says her parents were amazed. What do you think the three apostles thought? And what do you think this event did for Peter?
Well, this was basically the first time they've seen Jesus raise somebody from the dead. Peter saw that his mother-in-law was healed from the sick. And I think that's kind of why they were crying, too. like it goes back to the emotion. Like Peter probably had kids, assuming because he had a wife.
Sure.
Assuming that, so he could feel for the parents, and they were all crying because they thought he can't do anything now. Like she's literally gone, and so I think it just kind of showed Peter that Jesus really can do anything. Like he raised the sick, he can raise the dead, and he is truly from God. Like why?
Yeah.
Am I crying this much when he can save anybody from anything?
For me, I think that, on a side note, that I think they believed in Jesus. And in my opinion, I think that at this time they may have thought there were limits to what he could do. But this showed there are no limits. This really opened the door, so to speak. So I would think for Peter, whatever Peter's foundation was, it just went up 15 stories to take it to the next, or whatever. And the other two apostles, I would think that it would have, to be a witness to that would just be, I would think if whatever your faith level is or belief level is, that would have just taken it to a new level. And again, I guarantee you that was part of Jesus' plan. Okay, so let's jump into 3, and we've got about 4 minutes. Let's see how fast we can go through 3 and 4. I just want you to know we're on slide 15 or something, and I've got 21. We're going to go as fast as we can. So, Luke 9:1-6. So, Peter's commissioned with the 12. So, I'm going to go ahead and assume that we've read this one. And so what power and authority did Jesus give the 12?
He cast out demons and they healed them.
I gotta find the notes. All demons cure all disease, yeah. You're right. Correct. Good job. What did he send them out to do?
Proclaim the kingdom of God unto the earth.
Yeah. And there's a lot in that sentence, but it's really very straightforward, specific, correct? So, what were they to take for the journey?
Nothing.
Pretty much nothing. That's right. They gave a whole list of things. And on a side note, again, my wonderful computer skills, I found this picture. Can anybody tell me anything wrong with this picture?
The staff.
Man, you are like lightning fast. If I can give you bonus points... here you go. Here's your bonus points. I promise you. Good job. Thanks. You got it. That was quick. A staff. On a side note, when I looked up pictures of apostles, walking and things like that,
they all had staffs.
They all had staffs. This is what the world thinks. So another side example of how it's very important for us to read our Bibles and know the details. The details, I know it might be something small and silly, but the world thinks they all had staffs. That's what the world thinks. And a lot of times, my point in that is sometimes the world thinks things and the world's sort of right, but they're not right on the right path. So they basically take nothing with them. So if you take nothing, you got to eat. You need some clothes, you need a shower every once in a while, right? I highly encourage showers, very often. Even back in this time, I would definitely think that's a good idea. So how would they get what they needed? He would provide for them, right? Because they're on his team. And if they were rejected by a town, what were they supposed to do?
Check out the dust from the sheets.
Mm-hmm. And then, so do we do that today in any way, shape, or form?
Taylor Swift said it best. Shake it off.
Shake it off? Okay. Wow. Taylor Swift. You got 3 some bonus points for that one. Didn't know that one was coming. So, yeah, you just got to shake it off. But, I think sometimes we don't even make it to that point. We don't even make it to the get rejected point. We just don't bring it up.
We feel the rejection before we get there, and so we assume it's coming.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to jump to this really quick. I think this is where I'm going. No, I'm going to run out of time. I hate it when that happens. Okay, so To whom shall they go? In Matthew 10:5-6.